You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And this is one of those genuine what-the-heck-is-going-on moments. Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. What is going on? Fukushima, reactor number 4, is still leaning. It still has 70 times the cesium that Chernobyl spilled all over the world. On the 10th floor of this building, the sides of which have been blown out, it is listing, and they're in this giant swimming pool up there on the 10th floor. And if there's even the smallest little earthquake, that thing's going to fall over, and more than 70 times the radioactive cesium and other isotopes that were released by Chernobyl will be spilled out into the world, into the prevailing, the westward winds. I mean, this is a disaster that the world has never seen. And it's still ongoing, and they haven't been able to get in there to Reactor 4 and do anything about it. And you got Reactor 2 now blowing out so much radiation, nobody can go near it without instant death. It is absolutely extraordinary. I mean, the Japanese, they've got the 70, 80, 90-year-old people are volunteering to work at the plant for the few hours that it's possible to do some of these jobs, because they figure, hey, you know, by the time the radiation causes cancer, I'll already be dead. In the past, it's been, you know, the Yakuza, the gangsters in Japan. They've been recruiting people, homeless people by and large, who have no idea what they're up to, what they're doing, mentally ill people, and sending them to, you know, to TEPCO, to Fukushima. But that's only half the story. The other half of the story is we've got about 30 of these same kinds of reactors here in the United States, including Vermont Yankee up in Vermont. And here's where it gets genuinely bizarre. This is that what the hell is going on here moment. And that is that the Nuclear Regulatory Agency here in the United States that makes sure that nukes are safe and all this kind of thing, The NRC, Nuclear Regulatory Commission, according to the Associated Press, has been quietly watering down. Now, presumably this has been going on for some time, long before Fukushima. But now the regulations are being leaked. Watering down U.S. emergency preparedness in the event that one of our nuclear plants, one of our 30 and 40 and 50-year-old nuclear plants that are designed to have a useful lifetime of 20 to 30 years, one of our nuclear plants using the exact same design as Fukushima, one of our nuclear plants with radioactive waste in the ceiling, one of our nuclear plants, that many of which are already leaking, routinely releasing radioactive materials. This is something that's touching all Americans, it's all life, that one of our nuclear plants might go down. Are we going to be more prepared for that? Well, according to the Associated Press, despite nuclear plants all around the country aging, the evacuation zones around a nuclear plant, like, you know, keep in mind, at Fukushima, the original evacuation zone, the original dead zone, the original lookout zone was like, as I recall, 10 kilometers, then they made it 20 kilometers, then they made it 30, and I think it's now 50. And the U.S. government right off the bat said to anybody, any Americans who were there, get more than 50 kilometers away from this place, 20-some-odd miles. But our exclusion zones, our evacuation zones, in the event of a disaster, they're shrinking them. It could be not as bad. Does this make sense to anybody? I mean, the question that I'm really wondering here is, where are we going to go in this country with this whole issue of nuclear power? You've got this. Well, let me continue with number one. They are expanding, or they're shrinking rather, the evacuation zones, reduced evacuation zones. They're reducing the number of exercises that are required in the event of a nuclear accident, particularly for people who live around these things. And they have relaxed training for the emergency officials, for the police departments and the fire departments and the hospital nearby. They've reduced those standards too. So what is going on? How are we going to deal with this? Is this an example of regulatory capture? I think it is, frankly. I'll just tell you right up front. I think that what's going on is, as in industry after industry, we're seeing it with banks, we're seeing it with pharma, we're seeing it with the ag business, we've seen it with the USDA. In fact, you know, particularly egregious one, I wrote about it in my book on equal protection during the George Herbert Walker Bush administration. There was a guy who left one of the big ag companies, one of the companies developing, you know, genetically modified seeds and things, went to work for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, wrote the regulations that made that company's products legal, and then quit his job and went back to work for the company. And this is still going on. This is regulatory capture. Or the regulators know that if they do what industry wants, when they retire, industry will have a nice job for them. And, you know, most of these people are making 50, 60, 70, 80,000 bucks a year. It sounds like pretty good money, but hey, if you retire and you did a really good job for the industry and they hire you at $500,000 a year and you just work a couple of years, you paid off all your kids' student loans. You paid off your house. You got enough of a cushion that you can retire on. It's very seductive stuff. It should be illegal. And then on top of that, you've got these leaked documents that came out earlier in the week. And we did this on the program yesterday, as I recall. Maybe it was the day before. Where this group is forming specifically to trash wind power. You know, there has been this relentless attack on Solyndra. Mitt Romney echoed it yesterday. He said, we entrusted the president with our energy future, and he gave billions to his friends. Like Solyndra was his friends, right? The fact of the matter is Solyndra was less than 1% of the energy portfolio in the stimulus package. And hey, as Mitt Romney would say, you win a few and you lose a few. It's really pretty hypocritical for him to be blaming the president for Solyndra going down when a number of the companies that Bain Financial owned went down. And his response to that, his answer to that is, well, you win a few, you lose a few. But you've got this company, this organization that is forming to specifically trash wind power in the United States, to make wind power, and Fox News is still reporting on Solyndra almost every day, or regularly. I don't watch it enough to know. According to Media Matters, they actually watch it. God bless them. I don't know. You know, are there bars around Media Matters? You go over there at night, and they're just like, you know, everybody's just blotto. I mean, if I worked there after 8 or 10 hours of watching Fox News, oh man, I would need 3 gin and tonics. I'll tell you. So anyhow, what do we do about this? I mean, obviously we've got a money corrupting government problem. We've got a corporations corrupting government problem. That means we've got to worry about the Supreme Court. And we have 4 members of the Supreme Court, maybe 5. I'm certain of 4, who are over 70 years old. So whoever's president next time around, since the Supreme Court is the most powerful of the 3 branches of government, no, the founders didn't intend it that way, but that's how it is. They're going to be deciding these things. Should corporations still be allowed to do revolving doors and capture the regulators? So you got the Supreme Court. And, you know, what kind of citizen action is it going to take to get us off nuclear power and on sustainable power?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And don't give me this nuclear power is clean power stuff. You know, tell that to the people who live downriver from the uranium mines. There's a few other things I think of considerable importance in the news. I want to touch on them very, very quickly, and then I'm going to pick up some phone calls here. The National Defense Authorization Act, you will recall back last year, the NDAA, now there's something weird weird is the wrong word, unique about defense authorizations, constitutionally unique. The founders of this country, when they wrote the Constitution of the United States, said Congress can appropriate money, create taxes, you know, do levy. They could do whatever they damn well please on anything, you know, to build roads, to build bridges, to build hospitals, to put a man on the moon. It doesn't matter except military spending. Except military spending. This is in Article 1, as I recall, Section 8 of the Congress. And, in fact, I am looking for it because I want to read it to you because it's just mind-blowing. Here it is. It's sentence 12, Article 1, Section 8. The Congress shall have the power to raise and support armies, but no appropriation of money to that use shall be for a longer term than 2 years. Get that? This is because the founders didn't want us to have armies during times of peace. They were hostile to the idea of a perpetual standing army. So you can have a post office, one appropriation lasts 100 years. You can have schools, one appropriation lasts 100 years. You could have pretty much anything, food stamp, whatever you want, but not an army. You can only fund the army for 2 years at a time. That's the entire Defense Department, the military. You can only fund it for 2 years at a time. So every 2 years, you have to have a new National Defense Authorization to spend money. In other words, every 2 years, Congress has to say, okay, here's another 2 years worth of money. So when Barack Obama was presented with the last National Defense Authorization Act, it had in it a paragraph which said basically that he and the military could throw anybody in jail for as long as they want. And he wrote a signing statement for this. And his signing statement, I mean, it was pretty straightforward. It said, this is how he amended the legislation to the extent that he could when he signed it. Because basically, if he hadn't signed it, the military would have ground to a halt. The, you know, VA, pensions, everything. It just would have stopped. And the Republicans in Congress were not going to give him one of these, you know, give him a bill that didn't have this. Now, this, I don't mean to be a total apologist for the president on this, but I think that he was in a real corner. So he wrote this. He said, I want to clarify that my administration will not authorize the indefinite military detention without trial of American citizens. Indeed, I believe that doing so would break with our most important traditions and values as a nation. My administration will interpret Section 1021 in a manner that ensures that any detention it authorizes complies with the Constitution, the laws of war, and all other applicable law. End of quote. But now, two things have happened. One is that indefinite detention provision, Section 1021, just got knocked down by a federal judge in New York in a lawsuit by Chris Hedges and Noam Chomsky and Daniel Ellsberg, who said that under that provision, because they all, you know, whistleblowers, journalists, if they come into contact with terrorists, under that provision, they could be detained forever. And they might not even know it was a terrorist they came into contact with. This is unconstitutionally broad, and it's a violation of the First and Fifth Amendments. The judge agreed. That's number one. Number two, because every 2 years you have to reauthorize the military, and NDAA never stands for more than 2 years. So the new one is being negotiated in Congress right now, and there are both Democrats and Republicans who are saying this indefinite detention stuff, this is bonkers. So keep your eye on this. Keep your eye on this. And also this case where the federal judge struck down the NDAA, that's the good news. Here's the bad news. It's going to be appealed to the Supreme Court. And there are five right-wingers on the Supreme Court who have ruled just, you know, last month, that if you're behind on your child support payments, you could be strip searched in front of a whole group of people. If you jaywalk, you could be strip searched. If you're driving 10 miles over the speed limit, you could be strip searched. If you talk back to a cop in a way that he or she thinks is resisting arrest, you can be strip searched. And there are four members of the Supreme Court, four or five. I thought it was five, but I'm pretty sure it's four now that we tracked it down. There are four members of the Supreme, four of the justices are over 70 years old, which means the next president is probably going to pick a couple of justices. So are we going to have more Sam Alitos and Clarence Thomases and Antonin Scalias? Or are we going to have more Elena Kagans and Sonia Sotomayors? Or Ruth Bader Ginsburg? She was appointed by Bill Clinton, as I recall. She was appointed by a Democrat. It might have been Jimmy Carter, but it's, she's been on the bench for quite a while. But who's it going to be? So there's a big deal with that. And then this whole nuclear thing. And then finally, in Nebraska, yesterday, as I pointed out on this program, yesterday in Nebraska, there was the primary, the Republican primary got flipped by a last-minute infusion of cash into the candidacy of Deb Fischer, who was number three out of three. Three right-wingers running. She was the third. Freedom Works was supporting one of the other guys. There was two men in her. Freedom Works was supporting one of the men, the Koch brothers. Everybody was supporting, these two guys were like the establishment candidates. And this one guy, the guy who started, Ameritrade, comes in and says, here's some bucks. Joe Ricketts is his name. He drops a bunch of cash into this primary, and suddenly she wins. So he just bought himself a Republican senator. Is this a harbinger of what we're going to see this fall? Are we going to see Karl Rove buying himself a president? Or, for that matter, individual members of Congress? Sherrod Brown is under incredible attack in Ohio from Karl Rove. Karl Rove has spent millions in Ohio trying to take Sherrod Brown out. By the way, Sherrod Brown's going to be on our program in a little bit, along with Matt Taibbi and Beau Biden. It's going to be a fascinating show today, so stick around. I'm sorry I didn't get to the calls on nuclear power and whatnot.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Right after this break, does capitalism work? How badly is our government broke? What do we do about nuclear power? Stick around. Well, and here's the final piece of this, and then I promise I'm going to pick up your calls. But I just had to, there's so much cool stuff here I just have to share with you. Jack Kennedy was a Catholic, right? And there were Protestant preachers all over the United States in 1960 who were saying, Catholicism is a cult. In fact, Catholics were originally, back at the founding of this country, they were essentially banned from participating in our government. They were a discriminated minority. In part because the Pope had risen up and conquered much of Europe within the recent, generations of the founding of this country. But nonetheless, they didn't trust the Catholics. And in 1960, it was problematic. And Kennedy made an impassioned defense of his religion and said it would not influence his being president. And that seemed to be the end of that. And the Republicans, even the Republicans running, people running, Richard Nixon running against Jack Kennedy, decided that he was not going to raise the Catholic issue, even though it probably would have gotten him some votes. Anyhow, this Joe Ricketts guy, this very, very wealthy fellow who funded Deb Fischer and has funded other programs as well, including Sharon Engel over the years. He went off after Harry Reid at length. This guy says what has been leaked to the New York Times is a beautiful full color glossy brochure, basically called the Ricketts Plan. And in fact, it's called The Defeat of Barack Hussein Obama, the Ricketts Plan to End His Spending for Good. That's the title of it. And what it does is it says, let's take all these inflammatory clips of Reverend Jeremiah Wright and blast them during the DNC. We'll put them on billboards. We'll have a plane fly around the ceiling in the sky with it. We're gonna put it on all the TV shows wall to wall. We're gonna buy all the media everywhere. We're gonna crash the Democratic convention with Jeremiah Wright. They're gonna swift boat Obama. But it raises the question. Actually, it raises a couple of questions. Should Obama's response to this be, see, I told you I was a Christian, because you got 40% of Republicans who think he's a Muslim. Okay, I was a wacky Christian, but I was a Christian. Or B, to attack the, hey, I got a cranky billionaire coming after me. In other words, go after the messenger, not the message, which frankly is what I think John Kerry should have done with the Swift boat thing. And then the other thing that it raises is, does this mean that it's open season on Mitt Romney about Mormonism? Which could be fascinating. So we will be getting into that and more as time goes on. Tom, in Ellicott City, Maryland. Hey, Tom, thanks for listening to Sirius. What's up?
Hey, Tom. I like the show. I just wanted to let you know what's different about today's regulatory capture than it used to be is now they're willing to do things that could potentially destroy, be catastrophic, even destroy the people. It used to be, hey, if I said, who cares about flooding, that's because I lived in the hills and it wouldn't affect me. Now they're willing to do pollution and other things that could literally destroy them and their own families.
Right.
And when you talk about movies, there's a not a great movie, but it's kind of funny about regulatory capture and stupidity. It's called Idiocracy that you should check out because all the regulators were captured, so they decided to water plants with, like, Gatorade or something like that.
Yeah.
And all the smart people went into fixing erectile dysfunction.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, there's actually apparently a comedy movie being made right now about a billionaire who decides to put up a candidate for, I think it's for president, and they decide to get some really goofy, dumb guy. But they've got so much money that he actually gets elected or has a good shot at it. I don't know how the movie ends, but it's a comedy. But it's like, as a society, we've kind of come to accept this, to look at what's happening, you know, with Art Robinson and Peter DeFazio, for example, out in Oregon, where you've got a right-wing wackadoodle who thinks that nuclear waste would make good housing insulation because low-level radiation is good for you, don't you know? And public education should be banned because it's unconstitutional, it's wrong. He's actually a serious contender because he's got billionaires on Wall Street behind him who are PO'd at Peter DeFazio for having tried to regulate them. So
yeah.
Excellent point, Tom. Thanks for the call and you know, well made and well said. Melissa in Chicago, listening on WCPT. Hey, Melissa, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I love you and I love your show.
Thanks.
I was just calling because I wanted to make another comment about the Ricketts family.
Okay.
You mentioned now that they're putting out this Jeremiah Wright plan, but they're also the owners of the Chicago Cubs.
Right.
And the first thing that they did when they came to town, Mayor Daley was still in charge, they asked for over $100 million to fix up Wrigley Field. They were told no, and now they're coming back for it for a second time. And Mayor Emanuel seems to be more supportive of this plan, but I guess it's the way the government spending is bad for everybody, or government money is bad for everybody, except for when they need it and they want it.
Yeah, well, exactly. Mitt Romney, I mean, you know, one of his companies that Bain Financial built up that he's been bragging about took millions and millions of dollars in government subsidies and job creation money. This was down in Dade County. I think the company had the word Dade in its name. And then they bankrupted the company anyway. They took millions of dollars from the local and state government and then just, you know, fired everybody. But excellent point. Thank you, Melissa. George in Chicago. Hey, George, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. You and some of your early callers have made most of the points I wanted to make. I do want to thank you for continuing to raise the issue of nuclear power because, as you probably know, those of us who live in the Chicago area and the state of Illinois live in the most heavily nuked portion of the country, and the safety record of our nuclear power companies is mediocre at best.
Yeah, and this is a topic that you will not hear about in the corporate media, no matter how progressive it may seem, because the corporate media is owned by companies that, in part, also make nuclear power plants. So, yeah, excellent point, George.
It'd be interesting to know if Bain Capital and the Ricketts family are invested in nuclear power. But the issue of Wrigley Field came to a head on WCPT this morning. Many outraged Chicago Cubs fans were calling in to your colleague Ed Schultz's show to say that they would no longer consider themselves Cub fans, that this ad proposal was like the last straw, because even diehard Cubby fans who bleed Cubby blue cannot believe the Ricketts family, with all the billions at their disposal, had the temerity to ask the state of Illinois and the city of Chicago for money at a time when tax revenues are down, kids don't have enough books in school, people are homeless, houses are being foreclosed on, and these billionaires want money from my tax money.
Hey, Dallas gave it to George W. Bush. for the Texas Rangers. And, I mean, you know, there's a long history of this. You know, rich guys get funded by U.S. taxpayers, especially when they own sports teams. But you're right. It's absolutely wrong.
And what you said about the movie of a goofy guy being put into office by a lot of big money, well, that happened in 2000 already.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Thank you, George. Well said. BB in Seattle. Hey, BB, what's up?
Tom, thanks for taking my call. I'm a first-time caller. Love the show. I'm kind of bummed that Comcast out here only shows an hour of it here in Seattle.
Hmm.
But hey,
well, you can listen to all 3 hours of it in Seattle on AM 1090, if that helps.
That's true. That's true. I guess I got to go break out the old old tuner and see what I could find. But
there you go.
Seems like to me there's a thin thread that holds today's topic together. And again, that we go back to the military-industrial complex that is, in a sense, holding this country down and holding us back. You know, we keep talking about how much money we've wasted on war, how many people, how many lives have been altered. People can't get the help they need for PTSD. It makes no sense. And then even here, just last night, not too far from where I live, a kid was murdered, 30-year-old kid murdered on the street. And all the news media here can talk about is, what can the police do to stop this violence? Well, it's not the police's job to stop guns from getting in people's hands. They can't do that. The military-industrial complex, the largest gun supplier to the world. So, of course, we're going to have gun violence on the streets in our cities.
We're the largest exporter of weapons in the world.
And they just do not seem to get away from it. They don't seem to understand it. And again, you know, your previous caller just brought up the fact that how much money these people want for stadiums. We're dealing with that right now here in Seattle, where this guy wants to build a stadium, but we don't even have a team to go in the stadium.
Yes.
So why do we need another stadium? It makes no sense.
Right.
So what's happening? I mean, it's amazing.
You've already got, isn't it? It's branded by a phone company, isn't it? Verizon Field in Seattle, Quest.
No, it's there's Safeco, which is an insurance company, and it was Quest Field, which was a phone company that got changed to Century Stink. Oh, I'm sorry, Century Link. But you know, it's pretty much all the same. All the phone companies, you know, because Comcast is Paul Allen.
Right.
You know, they're taking over as much as they can take over. But again, I want to get back to this thing with the guy in Chicago. I think you're dead on with the Mormon thing. They can stand there all day and spout Jeremiah Wright as being such a bad person, but we can't even talk for 2 seconds about Mormon and the problems of Mormonism and all that. Or just
the real backstory of Mitt Romney, you know, that he's a seventh generation descendant of one of the original founders of Mormonism, that his grandfather and great grandfather both left the country so that they could have multiple wives. And, you know, he's got a whole bunch of aunts or great great aunts. And I mean, you know, just simple stuff there, you know. BB, thanks a lot for the call. I think this is all going to start coming out. It's going to be very interesting.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And you don't have to be a crazy Mormon hater or something like that to point out the actual history of the religion, particularly when it comes to African Americans. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and our telephone number, 866-987-THOM, Jeff in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Hey, Jeff, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
How you doing, Tom? Love your show.
Thank you.
Second time caller. I think you had a substitute the first time I called, but what my mind is totally confused right now, and I'll tell you why.
Jeff, if I may interrupt you, we've been waiting for Senator Sherrod Brown to call, and he just called in. I want to pick up this phone call. I'm going to put you on hold. We'll come back to you in a little bit, okay?
Okay.
Okay, thanks a lot, Jeff. I appreciate that. Senator Sherrod Brown, the U.S. Senator from Ohio, brilliantly representing the state of Ohio, on the line with us.
Whoa, brilliantly. I like that.
His website, SherrodBrown.com. Senator Brown, I understand you have introduced a Bring Jobs Home Act. Tell us about this.
Yeah, we do, as you know, Tom, and you've talked about this. This is Senator Sanders and others on the show, that how colossally stupid it is that if you shut down a plant in Cleveland or Akron or Toledo and you move it to Wuhan or Xi'an or Shanghai, you get a tax break, a tax deduction for your moving expenses. I mean, how stupid is that?
Yeah, it worked for Bain Financial.
It works for some of these. I mean, that's the problem. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly right. How would that tax break still stand when nobody I know agrees with it in Ohio?
Right.
And it's exactly right because of the corporations and the partnerships and the groups like Bain Capital. And I don't know if they've personally lobbied for this, but I know interest groups here like that because it gives them more chance to, you know, move offshore and cut their wage costs and you know, take advantage of breaks they get in those countries and still act like they're citizens in the United States and get tax breaks.
Right, and in many cases, they can blow out as much pollution as they want, too. I mean,
that's exactly right.
All kinds of
worker safety, pollution, all the things they do that give them an advantage.
Yep.
Exactly.
So what are you going to do about it?
Well, our legislation does two things. It's sort of a carrot and a stick. The stick is you're not getting these tax breaks anymore. The carrot is if you bring production from overseas back here, you're going to get for a while, you're going to get a tax incentive to do that. So, I mean, in the end, it's, you know, we do the best innovation in the world, but then we move our jobs overseas and then the innovation happens somewhere else. And we've got to continue to make things. My state's the third leading manufacturing state in the country. Only Texas and California, much larger, more populous states, make more than we do. And I know a ticket for working people and for low income people, a ticket to the middle class, a lot of times revolves around making stuff. And that's what I do every day.
Yeah. And so and presumably any tax breaks that you're giving to companies when they bring jobs back to the United States, that money would come back into the U.S. Treasury when they hire people. And all of a sudden you get 5,000, 10,000, 50,000 people working, paying income taxes. And the company is paying taxes in the United States rather than stashing their money offshore. So you make that money back.
Yeah.
What are the odds of this thing? It's given that virtually everybody, I'll bet that probably four fifths of Republicans and virtually 100% of Democrats think this is a brilliant idea. What are the odds it's going to make it through a filibuster by some of the more intransigent, I can't say that word. problematic Republicans in the Senate.
Boneheaded is the word you were
saying.
Boneheaded.
There you go. Perfect. Thank you, sir.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that, you know, whenever it's a tax cut for the rich, whenever it's a, you know, a tax break that upper income people or the largest corporations in the world enjoy, Grover Norquist and House Republicans and a number of Senate Republicans call it trying to change it a tax increase. And,
right.
You know, it's just, and we're trying to close this tax loophole on the for the student loans. And it's basically a loophole that Newt Gingrich has used in his lobbying firm. He pays himself a more or less minimal amount, relatively, and then takes it all in bonus at the end of the year, however they dole the money out, and he avoids paying the Medicare tax. He's not breaking the law. I'm not accusing Newt Gingrich of breaking the law. I'm accusing Newt Gingrich's friends of protecting that tax loophole
right. When
we try to end it in the House of Representatives or the Senate. And that to me is just, you know, it's one more advantage the wealthiest people in this country have. And, you know, that's why you're seeing so much money in these political campaigns. Now in Ohio, the outside groups, we figure the oil companies and others have spent $6 million against me in attack ads. That's why I said on your show, you know, $6
million. $6
million
and, already they've spent.
Already, and they started in March a year ago. They accelerated the spending in November. They're spending about, I think, $1 million in the next 2 weeks, something like that. And, I mean, that's why, you know, one of the reasons that, I mean, I ask people to come to my website and sign up SherrodBrown.com on our Citizens United.
Right.
To fight back against this, because we can beat them on grassroots, because I don't think there are very many Americans that think that oil companies spending money in a state like mine or any other is good government. I think they resent that these oil companies are making so much money and then spend it to try to defeat their enemies in Congress.
Well, we need to get out the word of who's behind these attack ads against you. Because, for example, I mean, Meg Whitman and Carly Fiorina were not able to buy the governor's mansion or a U.S. Senate seat in California, mostly because every time they spent money or put more of their own money into their campaigns, that became the story that the press picked up. Was, you know, Meg Whitman puts another $10 million into her own campaign. And so every time people saw her ads, you know, what went through their mind wasn't the content of the ad, but, oh, Meg Whitman's trying to buy the election. And
that's a very good point. We're trying to do that. It's hard because the voters are not, you know, they're not thinking about process. But when there's an, you know, it's never, it never says this ad's paid for by the oil companies.
No, of course not.
So you've got to find a way to remind people that every time they see an ad attacking me for darn near anything, that it's the oil companies, it's the big companies that outsource jobs, that I'm trying to, you know, I'm trying to fight them from doing that by taking their tax breaks away. That's the message. We hope when they see an ad, that's exactly right. That's what they think first, not the subject of the ad when they're half the time making it up anyway.
Right. And this is remarkable. And over at SherrodBrown.com, you have a proposed amendment to the Constitution to roll back Citizens United to put an end to this insanity.
I'm working with people like Senator Sanders, who is, you know, is obviously so well known on your show. And, Senator Udall and others that... you know, we want better disclosure, we want a constitutional amendment, we want politics changed back to, you know, normal people give. For instance, 17 people have contributed half of the money in Republican, of the millions of dollars in Republican Super PAC.
Amazing.
Why have 40,000 contributors? I mean, that would be the difference.
That's great. Senator Sherrod Brown, SherrodBrown.com.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and Matt Taibbi on the line. This is incredible what's going on. It's got all to do with Naked. Now, that got your attention, right? Hey, Matt, welcome.
How are you doing?
Great, 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 great to have you back with us. Matt Taibbi is a contributing editor to Rolling Stone magazine, the author of The Great Derangement and Griftopia. You can read his writings over at rollingstone.com, one of the best investigative reporters operating in the United States these days, in the world these days. And Matt, you have this great story about naked short selling over at Goldman. Do I have that right?
Yeah, Goldman and Merrill Lynch mainly. It's hilarious.
Let's define terms first. What's naked short selling?
Okay, well, short selling, which is just betting on the price of a stock to go down. The technical way that short selling happens is that you borrow shares. A stock, you sell them immediately, and then when the price of the stock declines, you go back out in the market, you buy the shares again, then you return them to your original lender. So you have to borrow shares in order to short a stock.
Right.
Naked short selling is just doing that without borrowing.
It's selling stock you don't own and you haven't even borrowed.
Exactly.
Which sounds illegal.
It is illegal. Yeah, it's basically counterfeiting. It's kind of like if you wanted the value of a currency to go down, if you just started printing a whole bunch of bills and pumping them into the economy, well, yeah, the value of that currency would go down. And that's what happens with naked short selling.
So naked short sellers dilute the marketplace for a particular, if they're naked shorting AT&T stocks and they hit some actual percentage of AT&T's stock in circulation, 0.5%, 1%, whatever it may be, that's enough to tip the market into, we're diluted. It's an inflation, a depreciation of the value of the stock. And it's a self-fulfilling prophecy because they're betting that the stock's going down.
Right, yeah, exactly. And then typically they do this to smaller stocks, actually, or emerging companies, so it's actually more than 1% or 2%. They typically do it to a degree that has a very tangible and immediate impact on the value of the stock. They've also used this technique with big companies. Most notably, there was a naked short selling that went on with Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers. Now, those companies would have collapsed anyway, but it's a tool... it's an illegal market perverting tool that short sellers can use to crush companies more quickly than they would otherwise.
Okay. And so this is illegal, and these companies have been claiming, we're not doing this. Trust us, we're not doing this. And then what happened?
Well, so there was one particular. Typically, what's interesting is that most of the companies that they do this to, they go out of business. They don't have enough money to litigate when it's all over. There was a rare exception, and that was Overstock.com, which survived a naked short attack in 2005 and 2006, and its CEO Patrick Byrne just made it his life's work to kind of go after the companies that did this to him. And so they were involved in a very long lawsuit, Overstock and Goldman. It was essentially Goldman and Merrill Lynch. But in the course of that lawsuit, they produced all this discovery with emails back and forth between Goldman and Merrill Lynch and some of their customers. And so a lot of that information was very, very damning. And press organizations like us, the New York Times, the Bloomberg, and one other, The Economist, we petitioned the court to unseal those documents and unseal that material. While we were in the course of doing that, petitioning, suing these companies, their own lawyers accidentally filed an unredacted version of some of this material to the court. So it all came spilling out, and it's all these emails from Goldman and Merrill executives essentially saying, we're doing this. And so it's this incredible legal blunder, and you see these amazing attitudes of these executives. The best is one I can't say on the air. There's an executive who says basically F the compliance and procedures, smashegers is what he says, right, when asked about the rules. So it's an amazing thing.
Yeah, and you were quite colorful in your characterization of what this lawyer is probably doing right now.
He's probably at the bottom of the ocean right now. Every lawyer I heard from today said they were hyperventilating when they heard this story. It's like the ultimate legal nightmare.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But now that it is out and it's in the press, that Goldman Sachs and Merrill Lynch were doing something that is criminal. Mm-hmm. Will there be criminal prosecutions?
No, I would think almost certainly not.
Because they're not 17-year-old black guys wearing hoodies, carrying Skittles, and I mean.
Well, the government traditionally, yeah, exactly. They have some people in some quarters. Some people think naked short selling isn't even a bad thing. There's a school of thought that this is just capitalism, and that if the market allows you to do this, you should be able to do it.
Well, before the markets were regulated, it was not uncommon, was it? I mean,
right,
back
right,
in the 20s.
Right. And yeah, no, it was common. It was relatively common right up through 2008 through 2009, actually.
But it was illegal then.
Right. But they are very indulgent about this activity. It's very, very rare to see anything like a criminal prosecution. There are occasionally fines levied. There were two characters who were involved in the story, actually, who got pretty severely fined by the American Stock Exchange for doing this. But typically, there's so much latitude within the rules for doing this. There are so many different loopholes that it's very, very difficult to prove a criminal case.
So if I'm a stockbroker and I know that I can make millions of dollars
Hello?
Doing naked shorts, you still with us, Matt?
Hello.
Yeah, Matt, we hear you. Matt? Hello, Matt. Hello, Matt. This is the problem with line 9. Matt, you still there? Oh, we are losing Matt. We lost Matt. Maybe his cell phone croaked. I don't know. But anyhow, I'll finish what I'm saying because I know where I was going with this, and maybe Matt will call back or Paul is going to try and get him on the line. But if I'm a stockbroker and I'm looking at this situation and I'm thinking, okay, if I naked short sell, some little startup company that does, if I put them out of business, they're not going to have the ability. Matt Taibbi's back with us. Matt, we just have a minute left here. If I'm a stockbroker and I figure, okay, if I do this to some little company who can't sue me, I'm going to make $1 million. And even if I get caught, I'm going to pay a $100,000 fine. I mean, how come? I'll bet it's still going on.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely going on. And it's again, the regulations for clearing, which is the whole issue of like when shares are actually delivered.
Right. When the naked short is discovered, basically, because you don't have the stock to back it up, right?
Yeah, exactly. But all, that whole process, it's all contained within the bureaucracy of the Depository Trading Clearing Corporation, which is like a pseudo-governmental agency. It's like a black hole, basically, and it's impossible to unwind this kind of activity in enough time to correct it, basically. So it definitely goes on.
So we need to just radically increase the penalties.
Well, yeah, I guess. Or so, just, you know, raise more moral people, I guess.
Yeah, well, you know, thinking that moral people are going to go into banking, that'll happen when we make banking a boring profession like a number of people have called for, Sherrod Brown, among others, have called for. But Matt Taibbi, RollingStone.com. Thanks, Matt, for the great work.
Thanks, Tom.
Keep it up. Great talking with you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So how do we get laws that make naked short selling illegal? Well, we stop having paid off legislators. And how do we do that? We change the Supreme Court. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. As I was pointing out, the president attached a signing statement to the defense authorization bill. I want to clarify that my administration will not authorize the indefinite military detention. But you got to deal with Congress, what Congress gives you. We have an election coming up that is, I think, going to be one of the most important in the history of our country. And the Supreme Court, we have four members of the Supreme Court over 70 years of age. And the Supreme Court, ever since the 1803, this Marbury versus Madison decision, has become the most powerful of the three branches of government. Just a lot is at stake. Beau Biden is on the line with us. He's the Attorney General for the state of Delaware. And Beau Biden, welcome to the program.
Great to be on with you, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. I should refer to you as General Biden. That's your title, right?
Well, you know, I am the Attorney General of the state, proud to be it, honored to be it. But, you know, real generals have... they have stars on their shoulders.
Yeah, okay.
I am a feel great in my wearing my other hat in the Army National Guard side. But no,
that's great.
Bo is the best way.
Okay.
I can call it. So.
Okay. BarackObama.com, by the way, the website that you're promoting, I guess, today. Military veterans and military families for Obama. What is this organization?
Well, look, I'm down in Norfolk, Virginia as we speak, about to kick off in about 2 hours. The Veterans and Military Families for Obama effort, it's a grassroots effort, led by a great Naval Academy graduate named Rob Diamond. And, he's put together, along with about 10,000 other people, a grassroots organization that supports the president, not just, for the way he's, comported himself as commander in chief, because the great job he's done as the president of the United States. And so we're doing a 16 or 17 states. The Obama campaign is launching this effort today, tomorrow, and through the weekend.
Yeah, I would think that there are probably a lot of military families and veterans who are very, very pleased with the president now that he has largely wound up the war in Iraq and is winding down the war in Afghanistan, these two wars that so many of us thought George Bush just never should have done in the first place.
Well, you know, whether you're a veteran or whether you're in the civilian side, it's always nice to have leaders who do what they say they're going to do, and that's what the president's done.
Yeah.
The president said in campaign, as you know, and covered it, he ended the war in Iraq in a responsible fashion. He's done that. He's also set us on a timeline to responsibly hand over power to the Afghan government. And you know, as importantly, Tom, he's also refocused our efforts to decapitate and put al-Qaeda in a position where it's in its weakest position since it has been since 9/11. And you know, signing off and pursuing and actually authorizing and pursuing the effort that eliminated bin Laden from the face of the earth.
Yeah.
This is a strong, decisive commander-in-chief that resonates with veterans.
The two tax credits that encourage businesses to hire unemployed and disabled vets, these were pushed very hard by the president. I believe it was Nancy Pelosi got those through Congress?
Yep, the former speaker did that with the president. And, you know, it's two tax credits, two separate tax credits for employers who receive tax credits if they hire returning veterans. Mm-hmm. We have a force that has so ably served our nation over a decades-long two wars, multiple tours in some cases. They come back incredibly well qualified, and this is to incentivize employers to do what a lot of them are doing already, but gives them further incentive to hire some of the most capable and able people that America has to offer that have worn our uniform.
One of the things that has always baffled me, and maybe you have some insights into this, we're talking with Beau Biden, the Attorney General for the state of Delaware, is my dad was a hardcore Republican. He showed up at the tail end of World War II. He volunteered while it was still going on, but when he got out of boot camp, it had ended. And so he spent a year in Japan. But he was a Republican, and he always referred to the Democratic Party as the War Party. And now this was years and years ago, of course, but, from the Vietnam War to the World War II, World War I, the Korean War, they were all fought and, with the exception of Vietnam, won by, I guess you could take Korea out of that. Eisenhower put an end to that. But World War I and World War II were fought and won by Democrats. And Democrats were never perceived as, quote, soft on defense until, it seems, Reagan came along. And I'm not sure how he changed that because, he was selling weapons to Iran, and he's hard on defense. I mean, what's any insights into how this whole weird upside down dynamic came about, or
I don't know. Your show, you cover these things in a very intelligent way, and I leave that to you. I'm not being solicitous. The reality is, what I do know is that this president, as commander in chief, has been incredibly strong, incredibly decisive. And the way he is, how he has gone about projecting our forces around the world to make us a safer nation. Yeah. But, one of the things I'm here to talk about in Norfolk today with veterans is he also understands that it's being a commander-in-chief is not just how and when we go to war, and it's not just how and when we redeploy our resources, but it's also the way we take care of and honor our sacred commitment to veterans. And this president, from the moment he took office and was sworn in office, he increased the Veterans Affairs budget by more than anyone has in the last 30 years. His fiscal year 2013, which, as you know, is the next budget,
right,
seeks a 10% increase in the budget. I can go through, line after line, and that contrasted, Tom, with what Governor Romney has done, and when he's kind of had an ability to affect veterans' benefits, mm-hmm, which has been limited because he was just a governor for four years.
Right.
But within the first month of office as becoming a governor of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, he sought, before his state legislature, hundreds upon hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of cuts. Luckily, this legislature stood up to him, didn't let him do that. Right. But even if I may, just go on for one moment longer, the thing that really blows me away is Governor Romney on Veterans Day last year assembled a group of veterans, and he announced that he wanted to voucherize Veterans Administration.
You're kidding.
He wants to
privatize it.
I mean, look, you can have a debate about what the role of government is, but the role of government for sure is to take care of veterans, not to privatize it.
You betcha. Attorney General Beau Biden of the great state of Delaware, sir, continue the great work. Thank you for being with us.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks.
Much appreciated. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
So if Mr. Ricketts and company go after Barack Obama because of Jeremiah Wright, does that mean we can talk about Mormonism again?
I'll show you just how cool scientists are. We study everything, that's why we're cool. And yes, most of us got high marks in school. And proud.
Welcome back. It's our Geeky Science Alert. It's the second hour, the second segment of the second hour of our Thursday show where I have an opportunity, or the second half hour, where I have an opportunity of the second hour, where I have an opportunity to spend 5 minutes, well, not even five, 3 minutes with you. That's all they give me, 3 minutes for science. Okay, let's not use it up. Eating too much sugar. This is from Agence France-Presse. Sugar can make you dumb, U.S. scientists warn. But it's not just sugar. It's high fructose corn syrup. This is from AFP. Eating too much sugar can eat away at your brain power, according to U.S. scientists who published a study Tuesday showing how a steady diet of high fructose corn syrup sapped lab rats' memories. They gave it to the rats as drinking water for 6 weeks. Before they started the study, they enrolled them in a 5-day training session on a complicated maze, one group of rats getting the sugar, one group of the rats not. In fact, the groups that were not was getting DHA, which is it's a variation of it's one of the essential fatty acids that you find in fish oils, for example, or in flaxseed oil. And so anyhow, at the end of the 6 weeks, half the rats got high fructose corn syrup, the other half didn't. Quote, the animals were slower. This is the ones who got the high fructose corn syrup. The animals were slower, and their brains showed a decline in synaptic activity. This is according to Fernando Gomez Pena, a professor of neurosurgery at the David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA. He said, quote, their brain cells had trouble signaling each other, disrupting the rats' ability to think clearly and recall the route they'd learned 6 weeks earlier. They also found that the rats' brains had developed insulin resistance. And just like your muscles need sugar to work, and they get that sugar via insulin, your brain needs sugar to work. In fact, the brain is one of the largest consumers of sugar in the body. It processes thoughts and emotions. They note high fructose corn syrup is commonly found in soda, condiments, applesauce, baby food, and other processed snacks. The average American consumes more than 40 pounds of high fructose corn syrup a year, according to the USDA, and I consume none. Which means that one of you out there is eating 80 pounds of that stuff. The conclusion, I'm quoting from the scientists, eating a high fructose diet over the long term alters your brain's ability to learn and remember information. But adding omega-3 fatty acids to your meals can help minimize the damage. My question is, why produce the damage in the first place? I mean, it's pretty amazing when you think about it. It's really quite amazing when you think about it. 866-987-THOM. And, Paul, that thing I printed, I would very much appreciate getting that right away. Anthony in Detroit. Hey, Anthony, what's on your mind today?
Good afternoon. About this J.P. Morgan failure there, lost some folks' money, $2 billion, and it's still going up as we speak, from my understanding. Now, couldn't the president, his administration, do more to criminalize that, or more regulations? He's giving lip service, saying now that there should be more regulations.
Yeah.
That's the case for, but that's like lip service. Is it something that he can put forth from his vantage point?
The problem is that the president doesn't make laws. The laws have to originate in the House of Representatives. All laws have to originate in the House of Representatives, which is now controlled by the Tea Party. It's controlled by Republicans, the Tea Party Republicans. And then it has to go to the United States Senate, where the Republicans have been using the filibuster to knock down things like the Buy America Act and all kinds of really, really good programs. And then it goes to the president to be signed. So he can use the bully pulpit to push for these kind of things. And I think he's been talking like that. But no, he doesn't have the ability to do that, unfortunately. Anthony, thank you for the call. But speaking of big banks, Norman and Orain Rousseau. This is Dave Johnson writing over at Alternet today. This is a couple that made the mistake of getting a predatory loan from Wells Fargo. This is one of the, they bought an exploding mortgage back when everybody thought it was so brilliant, and the bank salespeople were out there hustling these things. And as the rates went up, they continued to make the payments. They were never late. In fact, they made them in person with a cashier's check at the same bank every month. Always paying with a cashier's check, always paying at the same bank, always paying every month. 1 month, Wells Fargo lost their check. Now, they had a copy of the check, so they could prove that Wells Fargo took the check, deposited the check, and one of the people at Wells Fargo must have put it someplace else. I don't know, maybe in the CEO's paycheck, but it didn't get applied toward their house. They were on this, like white on rice or whatever the phrase is these days, and said, hey, look at this. And Wells Fargo said, we don't care. Our computer says you're late. We're putting you into foreclosure, and we're going to take your home. They fought this for months, but the bank was not only foreclosing the home, but they started applying fees, your late fees. So the bank is making all kinds of profit on this, and then they take their home. And as Dave Johnson writes over at Alternet, the Rousseaus fought back. The bank dragged it out for so long and pulled so many tricks getting its way every step of the process until this Sunday, this last Sunday, 5 days ago, Norman Rousseau finally gave up and shot himself in despair 2 days before the scheduled eviction of Tuesday, May 15th. And Dave says, that's a tragic story, but you dig into it, it gets even worse. Facts. I mean, this, if you bank with Wells Fargo, you might want to call them up and say, you ever heard of the Rousseaus? Easy enough to remember, you know, Mr. Rousseau back during the 1600s, who one of the thinkers of the Enlightenment. But anyhow, you ever heard of the Rousseaus? Your bank caused Mr. Rousseau to commit suicide, even though he was paying you every month. On March 2000, here's the background. On March 2000, Norman and Arane Rousseau put 30% down to buy a house at 540 Wilshire Place in Newbury Park, California. In the following years, they were solicited to refi their loan. In October 2007, they met with a loan officer and, quote, stated that they were only interested in obtaining a conventional 30-year fixed-rate loan and explained their desire to have consistent payments over the life of the loan. They were, quote, assured that they could significantly reduce their monthly payments by more than $600 a month with a lower-interest refinance loan. The bank assured them that the payment option arm, these are the exploding mortgages, was the new industry standard and that historically low rates are going to continue to decrease. And, quote, in the worst-case scenario, they were assured that historical data for the index indicated that changes in interest rates were slight and an increase should be negligible on their payments. And they should expect to refinance within the next 2 years to take advantage of even more favorable interest rates. In other words, they bought the line that the bank was selling. Doesn't mean they were dumb. Doesn't mean they were greedy. It means they had a really good salesman on the other end of this thing at Wells Fargo. So they paid. And in May 2009, the bank claimed that they had missed their April payment. They showed up and proved that they had made their payment in person at the bank using a cashier's check and that check had been supplied by the bank. The runaround began. The bank began harassing them for the payment, sometimes as many as 6 to 8 calls per day, sometimes late at night. On August 3rd, 2009, the bank claimed the Rousseaus hadn't paid June or July's payments either, demanding $3,406.50. But then on August 8th, the bank said, oh, you're all current. We found everything. And then they claimed, oh, no, you didn't pay. You owe us $3,478.25. At that point, they hired a lawyer, the Rousseaus. And from the lawyer, they learned that the loan they received, the rate was actually higher than, you know, what they had been quoted. The bank had increased their income. You know, when they wrote down on the form to get the loan, they wrote down $76,000 as the guy's income he made a year. The bank changed it to $136,800 so that they would qualify for this loan. I mean, there was forgery in the bank, apparently. In other words, the bank had scammed. This is, quoting from this article in Alternet by Dave Johnson. In other words, the lender had scammed them to get those fees, which is a widespread practice at the time. In September, the bank stopped accepting payments at the branch, saying checks had to be mailed. They tried to modify their loans. They were told that they were in pre-foreclosure, which was routine, and not to worry about it. On and on this went, getting the runaround, and finally, I mean, these are people who owned their house. And finally, this last Sunday, the bankers claimed one more victim. Norman Rousseau shot himself at 10 in the morning. Oriane Rousseau doesn't even have the money to bury her husband. She's looking to the VA for help. He's a veteran. If you want to help, you can contact their attorney, Chris Gardas. And his email address, I would recommend, I don't like giving out email addresses over the air here. If you go to alternet.org, the article is titled, Wells Fargo Has Blood on Its Hands, Desperate Man Commits Suicide After Shocking Foreclosure Mistreatment. If you have never heard a good argument before for moving your money into a credit union or a small local bank? Let me put this at the top of the list. We'll be back with your calls after this, 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And, you know, again, back to my original topic for the day here. What are we going to do about nuclear power in this country, particularly when the right-wingers are opposed to wind? Sugar. Yeah, but don't eat that sugar, sugar. It's that's her name. You can kiss her, but that, you know, the actual subs, high fructose corn syrup. Stay away from that stuff. Well, I stay away from. I can't advise you, but I. Anyhow, Bob in Sycamore, Illinois. Hey, Bob, what's up?
Good afternoon, Tom. How are you?
I'm great, but I'll get better. How are you, Bob?
I'm doing well. So this is my take on high fructose corn syrup. And can I get away with saying who manufactures the seeds?
Sure.
All right, so you got Monsanto producing these Roundup-ready GMO garbage corn seeds. And we all know bugs can't crawl on them, so it's pretty much a poisonous to a bug. And, you know, we're just producing, you know, thousands and thousands of acres of this garbage corn, and we're selling it to the refiners that make this high fructose corn syrup garbage. And they put it in, like you said, in everything. So you're pretty much, in my eyes, you're ingesting a poison. So you can only imagine what it's doing to your insides.
I find that,
on it.
You know, yeah. I mean, I actually, my body reacts really negatively to high fructose corn syrup. I mean, I get like diabetic-like symptoms when I eat it. And usually unrealizingly, but it's just, or, you know, restaurant food. I mean, they put it into ketchup. You know, they put it in tomato paste. You eat a pizza, high fructose corn syrup. It's in everything. Bob, I personally believe that you're right. I mean, you know, now the last time we had this conversation on the air some months ago, not you and me, but, you know, this topic came up at some length. The high fructose corn syrup lobby sent me a nice 28-page four-color brochure all about how wonderful high fructose corn syrup was, citing all these studies about it's safe and it's healthy and everything's wonderful. Don't worry, be happy. And I'm sure that that's what they give to all the members of Congress when they walk in with their large campaign contributions. But
and their textbooks, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But personally, I'm not buying it. Bob, thanks a lot for the call. Well said. James in New York City, listening to WWRL. Hey, James, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. You were talking to Senator Brown a little while ago about motivating companies to relocate to this country.
Yes, to bring our jobs home.
Yes, I've had a concern for years. Whenever a city or any governmental body puts a bid out for a contract, they establish an evaluation process, which is usually done by points. And if there was a federal law that any contract, before it goes abroad, they should award 5 points to an American company.
Right.
It may prevent contracts from going abroad.
Oh, that's interesting. You're familiar with the federal procurement process then. I'm not. But I do know that I would think that if the government started, you know, just stopped issuing routine waivers to blow up the Buy American Act that Franklin Roosevelt passed in 1935, that says that every government agency that buys things, and you know, federal purchasing is about 20% of our GDP or 20% of our economy, all government purchasing a little over 30%, that if they had to buy things made in America, there would be demand for things to be made in America, and many companies would start bringing their manufacturing back here. I also think that if we went back to having tariffs, having import taxes on things, so that things made overseas, by the time the taxes paid were more expensive than things made in the United States, we'd start making things in the United States again. But, James, excellent point. Thank you very much. That kind of preferential treatment, by the way, is illegal under NAFTA, CAFTA, SHAFTA, WTO, all those other ones. And another reason why we need to pull out of these trade agreements. Kevin in Seattle, listening to Talk 1090. Hey, Kevin, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. You're a smart man.
Thank you. The praise is unnecessary. I appreciate the call, but it's unnecessary, or the comment.
Well, time's the truth. Nice to be heard, Tom. First off, the comment you made about the oil companies not being forward-looking, being in the energy business, is the profit they're taking, wouldn't that be a profit-motivated company? Wouldn't they analyze the profitability of an investment and then move forward with it?
You would think.
Meaning, didn't make sense that they're, you know, the greedy underside of energy, but they're not able to see the profit in another.
Well, here's it's not so much that they don't see the profit, you know, that ExxonMobil doesn't see the profit in moving into the solar business. It's sort of like, Apple computer doesn't see the profit in manufacturing solar panels either. They do what they do. ExxonMobil has this huge infrastructure. They've got refineries. They've got oil wells. They've got drilling rigs. They've got tanker trucks that are driven all over the country. They've got pipelines that are all over the country. They've got giant ocean-going tankers. They've got this infrastructure that is designed not for solar energy but for oil. And for them to move into, even though, as I was saying earlier, that I made the example of how Alexander Graham Bell took his telephone to the telegraph companies and to Western Union and said, hey, you want to buy this thing? You got wires all over the country. And they said, no, we're in the telegraph business. They didn't realize they were in the communications business. And similarly, see, that would have been an easier transition because they already had the wires in place. But similarly, the oil companies don't realize that they're in the energy business. But there is a significant changeover cost to say, okay, we're going to get out of this subset of the energy industry, that being oil, where we've got all this infrastructure, probably only two-thirds of which has been fully amortized, and we're going to move into a brand new energy sector. And so that's why I think that that's probably a good piece of why they're not doing it. Also, they have such an investment in trashing renewables. With all this money that they're giving to the Heartland Institute and all these right-wing think tanks, the American Enterprise Institute, and blah, 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 you know, all benefiting from the, you know, Fred Singer getting his checks and all benefiting from the largesse of the oil companies, that if they were to suddenly go into these industries in a big way, it would blow up their credibility. So I think that it's going to be, that they're going to stay with what they're doing. And they're going to slowly slide down, like the tobacco companies are doing right now. They're still profitable, and they'll be profitable as long as people are addicted to nicotine.
One last question for you, Tom. If Greece and Portugal and Spain are teetering on the edge of insolvency, if you will, isn't that movement that got them there a socialistic spin on taking care of the safety net?
No, what got Greece where it is cutting a deal with Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs came in and said, we will help you hide your debt so you can join the EU. And they had too much debt, and then when the crash hit, they couldn't cover it. That's what happened. Goldman Sachs did it to them.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. And this question, let me just put it out to you. And if Jeremiah Wright is going to be the big campaign issue, and this is apparently not going to happen until about a month from now, until the DNC is happening. It's going on the Democratic National Convention in Charlotte. It's good, a little ways down the road, but you've got this cranky billionaire who is who has just flipped a race in Nebraska, who supported Sharron Engel against Harry Reid, and I guess the lesson he took from that is that he just didn't put enough money into the campaign. And he's sitting around going, well, what shall I do now? How about I make my man president? And so he, some of his hired hands put together this detailed document that lays out this whole thing about, Mitt Romney, about Barack Obama and Jeremiah Wright. And Paul, if what I printed is on the printer, I need it. And And if Jeremiah Wright, this is the question, if Jeremiah Wright is going to become the issue, thank you, Paul. If Jeremiah Wright, much appreciate that. If Jeremiah Wright is going to become the issue, in other words, if Obama's spirituality, if his religion is going to become the issue, then should we be having a dialogue about Mormonism? My personal opinion is that most all organized religions are cults. You know, this is where I agree and disagree with Bill Maher. He says all religion is a cult, period. I think all organized religion is a cult. I'm all in favor of disorganized religion. I'm a religious anarchist. I get it. You know, people coming together for the purposes of prayer and worship or meditation or living monastically or whatever, I'm fine with all that. In fact, I view that as probably healthy behavior and something that you know, humans are wired to do. A sense of community, a sense of the sacred. But when it becomes like, okay, you will live the way our leader says you will live because he was, you know, one of the gods talked to him. He's been talking to Thor, or Odin. Oh, well, that was a couple thousand years ago, but whatever. So, for example, Mitt Romney once told a group of evangelicals that he believes in Jesus Christ, but he realizes that that means something different to them than to him. Interesting. This is over at Addicting Information. Let me get back over there. Addictinginfo.org. It's a great article. It's titled "Former Mormon Explains Why Mitt Romney Should Never Be President." And he says the Mormon religion is a cult of brainwashed souls. Mormons duck out the back door of the church as quickly as they come in the front door. The number of people in the church roll rises all the time because once you join and decide the church isn't for you, they still continue to count you as a member. In fact, if you're dead, they count you as a member. In fact, other people who have died, they count as members. Anyhow, he has this list of what he describes as freaky Mormon beliefs. Now, again, let me put this caveat. I think every religion has freaky beliefs. There is none. I've done my fair of shopping in my life, and there's none that is like, oh yeah, this is the, at least for me. Anyhow, Mormons can have a member stand in for a dead person and be baptized as a member of the church. They can have a couple stand in for a dead man and woman and marry them in the church. They believe that God was once here on earth and he attained godhood due to his good works on earth, which is one of the reasons why the Mormons stress good works, which seems like a fine thing, right? Good works, I mean, geez, what a wonderful thing. But God did good works and then was elevated to live on the planet Kolob. Now, I've been using the planet Xenu for my pigeons for years and years because I'm pretty sure that that's Scientology's planet. And, you know, if you spend your $100,000, they say, okay, we'll give you the real secret. And the real secret is L. Ron Hubbard's original article from Amazing Science Fiction Stories back in the 1950s that, you know, they came from the planet Xenu and fertilized Earth 10,000 years ago. And when everybody's clear, they're going to come back and et cetera. This is even weirder. God went to live on the planet Kolob. This is why Mormons stress good works as part of their membership. But here's the rub, writes James Martin, former LDS member. Addicting Info, by the way, says they are not endorsing this article. I suppose I should put the same caveat on here. And in fact, if any of this is wrong, given that, yeah, and now this is something you will not hear in the attack ads against Obama based on Reverend Wright. They're not going to say, if any of this is wrong, please let us know and we'll correct it and apologize. If I have any of this wrong, and you're a good Mormon, call me and tell me, 866-987-THOM. I take instruction well and correction well. So what Mr. Martin is saying is that he says, here's the rub. How could God create the earth according to the book of Genesis unless he was already a god. But according to the Mormon teachings, he attained godhood through good works. He said, one of the tenets of the Mormon Church is to have as many babies as possible. This goes along hand-in-hand with Romney's stand against abortion and birth control. If you're not popping out a new Mormon unit every 12 to 18 months, you're not having enough unprotected sex. I doubt they phrase it that way. It also explains why they stress getting a good education so you can make enough money to support all those kids. I've got no problem with that. He says, back when I was a youth in the church, we were taught that black people were descendants of Cain and that their dark skin was the curse God put on Cain for killing Abel. Remember Cain and Abel, the sons of Adam and Eve? Cain killed Abel. God put a mark on his forehead, as I recall. It's been a few years since I read the book of Genesis, but that's my recollection. And so that wherever he went, he would be shunned by people. And then Cain left the Garden of Eden, and he went to a nearby town and found a woman and married her and had children. Which raises the question, if Adam and Eve were really the first people, where'd this town come from down the road? Well, like with every tribe, it's actually, you know, the Bible is not the creation story of all mankind, humankind. It's the creation story of one tribe. But anyhow, back to the Mormons. He says that he was taught that black people, that mark of Cain, that was black people. He said we weren't to be rude about it, but we were not to associate with them. This racist teaching is no longer part of Sunday school because a few black people threatened to sue the church for racism and discrimination because they weren't allowed to join. Suddenly the church elders had another supposed vision that blacks had paid their penance, meaning they still done something wrong, and now they're allowed to join, but they were not allowed to join to hold church offices. So the threat to sue was renewed, and lo and behold, another vision came down the pike, and blacks are now given full membership. And, you know, you wonder. I mean, Mitt was in this church, I believe it was 1978 that the church started admitting African Americans, and Mitt was born in the 1940s, so he was in his 30s. And still a member of a church that didn't let black people in, and he never had a problem with that? And nor did his dad? Shouldn't we be scratching our heads about this? Oh, that's right. Reverend Wright is a black guy. Obama's a black guy. Oh, yeah.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You see how this is going to play out? I mean, it may well be that this will get so ugly that when they start trashing Reverend Wright, they'll say, oh, and by the way, Mitt Romney was part of a church that didn't even let black people in.
Like busting loose, busting loose. Give me the bridge now. I feel like busting loose, busting loose.
Okay, once again, let me be very clear. I don't think that Mormons are any crazier than Catholics or Baptists or Methodists. And I guess I'm a Methodist. I'm not sure. I mean, it's Coptics, whatever. I mean, it's... Every religion has crazy things or things that other people consider crazy and people in that religion don't. Whether it's excluding black people until 1978 in the case of the Mormons or whether it's excluding women from the priesthood in the Catholic Church or whether it's, I don't know, fill in the blanks. You know, I'm sure Bill Maher could come up with a longer list than me. But the point is that the Republicans are, or at least this guy, this right winger, who is going to try to, Joe Ricketts is going to try and swift boat the president, is planning on coming out with, or is debating whether. I mean, they've organized this whole thing about, you know, okay, let's do this, take down the president based on his having sat in the pew and listened to Reverend Wright say things like, God is going to damn America because of our social policies. Okay. Mitt Romney, at 19 years of age, the youngest son of the most prominent Mormon in American politics, which was George Romney, governor of Michigan, this is James Martin's article, was told that the Lord expected great things from him. Well, of course. Any young man would love to hear that from their religion. All young Mormon men, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints refers to them as worthy males. receive such a blessing as they embark. This is the blessing that they get, right? Great things are expected of you on their requisite journey as religious missionaries. And Mitt Romney, I mean, the Vietnam War was raging, but instead of going to Vietnam, he went to France and lived in a palace. Because as a Mormon missionary, he qualified as a priest, as a minister, under U.S. law that not only has to do with taxes, all this activity was tax exempt, but also has to do, we need to start a church here, Shane. But also has the Church of the Gooey Death, God Stamp Redemption Center. In any case, instead of going to Vietnam, he lived in this palace in Paris. I mean, a palace, a mansion, with a butler and a cook, and so that he could go out for a few hours every day and knock on doors and pass out Mormon literature. Instead of fighting in Vietnam. At 19 years of age, the youngest son of the most prominent Mormon in American politics, a seventh-generation direct descendant of one of the faith's founding 12 apostles, Mitt Romney had been singled out as a destined leader. The Cougar Club, an all-male, all-white social club at Brigham Young University in Salt Lake City, was humming with talk that its president, Mitt Romney, would become the first Mormon president of the United States. If not Mitt, then who? Was the ubiquitous slogan within the elite organization. The pious world of BYU was expected to spawn the man who would lead the Mormons into the White House and fulfill the prophecies of the church's founder, Joseph Smith Jr., which Romney has avidly sought to realize. And so, is this going to be... Joseph Smith ran for president in 1844. I don't know. Is this going to be something of consequence? I don't know. John, in Orange County, California, you disagree with me.
Actually, I'm a big supporter of you, Tom. I just want to know, as a raised Mormon, I've called you before on this subject. Mormons, mm-hmm. First of all, they don't believe that God was born on this planet.
But he came to this planet, and he became perfected on this planet.
No. See, the Mormons, they believe God is actually the Godhead. It's God the Father, God the Son, and the Holy Ghost. And God the Son came to this planet to get a body. And then, because that's a big part of Mormon theology. But God the Father did not. He was God before that.
Okay. When Joseph Smith ran for president in 1844, he said that he was going to be he ran as, quote, the independent commander-in-chief of an army of God, end quote. And his platform was to replace the U.S. government with a Mormon-ruled theocracy.
He may have.
He ran against James Polk and Henry Clay, the Whig.
Boy, and only ran for president. But what he did is he actually ran on getting rid of slavery, too. I'm not here to
except for his wives.
Pardon me?
No black slaves, just wife slaves.
Well, and actually, Mormons have always baptized blacks into their church. They just have never allowed them to have the priesthood.
Yeah.
So that's a small
comfort,
again,
I think.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not trying to defend the Mormon church. What I'm trying to say is that you are so good at defending the liberal position, the correct position, I feel, on so many issues, and that we can really attack Romney on major things, which you have done, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
And I've learned a lot from your books. I promote them everywhere. But I think that we shouldn't stoop down to the Republican level of attacking like they do with Jeremiah Wright.
I think
it's a ridiculous argument they're making. And so I don't think we should match them with ridiculousness. We should stay elevated from that fray and just pound hard. Like the meltdown.
It's a noble thought. And I do cover all those other things. It's a noble thought. And that said, I think that the Republicans are making this calculation that Americans are very religious, particularly on the right. And if they can scare those people on the right about Obama's religion, then they'll vote for Romney. And what I'm saying is, if you're going to scare largely Protestant Christians, if you're going to scare them away from Obama with his affiliation with Reverend Wright, then you need to fill them in on who Mitt Romney, what Mitt Romney's religion is all about, because that's going to be just as scary to them. to these, you know, evangelical Protestants. Not that it is to me, but it is to them. John, but I get your point. Thank you.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Mormon prophecy. One day the Constitution would hang like a thread as fine as a silk fiber. Then a Mormon president will save the country. That's the good, the bad, and the very, very predatoriously ugly. The good. Rob Hatch. Hatch, a Republican businessman and 10-year veteran of the wind energy industry, wrote a scathing op-ed in the Des Moines Register attacking the, quote, oil billionaires spending millions of dollars on false smear TV commercials. He went on to say, it is difficult to watch these people air their TV ads slapping around the president's support of my employees' jobs. The president kept our doors open and our employees working because of the wind production tax credit. End quote. In Iowa alone, wind is producing 20% of the state's electricity, creating more than 215 businesses and employing over 6,000 people. It's time for more Republicans to think like Mr. Hatch and realize wind power is the energy of the future and an economic lifesaver. The bad. Representative Mike Kaufman, Colorado representative, was caught on tape earlier this week ranting about how he thought President Obama was not an American. Kaufman said, I don't know whether Barack Obama was born in the United States. I don't know that, but I do know this. In his heart, he's not an American. He's just not an American. Kaufman is the latest Republican to join a new wave of birtherism. And like the rest of his colleagues, the more time Kaufman spends on this ridiculous debate, the less time he's spending on issues that Americans actually care about, like fixing the economy or helping the environment. And the very, very ugly Virginia delegate Bob Marshall. This week, Marshall and other Virginia Republican delegates rejected former Navy pilot Tracy Thorne Beglin for a seat on Virginia's lowest trial court because he was gay. Marshall said that Thorne Beglin's gay lifestyle is exactly contrary to his obligation to uphold the state constitution. And on CNN this morning, when asked whether he agreed the times had changed in America and that Thorne Beglin should be given a chance, Marshall replied,
sodomy is not a civil right. It's not the same as the civil rights movement.
Well, first, Marshall is wrong. Sodomy is a civil right. That was established in the landmark case of Lawrence v. Texas. But more importantly, Marshall and his colleagues disqualified Thorne Beglin because of his sexual orientation and paid no attention to his ability to do the job. That is very, very ugly. Okay, I was going off on Romney and the Mormons, and because there was a story in the New York Times this morning about how the Republicans were planning on going off on Reverend Wright and the president. How times change. 1 hour and 30 minutes ago, roughly, TPM put up a story. They were contacted by the office of Joe Ricketts. Now, this was after the White House came out and said, will you repudiate this? Or are you going to run these Jeremiah Wright ads? These guys are playing hardball. The White House came out and said, are you going to do this? Really? And Joe Ricketts has come out and said, nope, not going to do it. The people who put the proposal together said, oh, it was just one of many proposals. It's just, you know. So for now, I'm taking my Mormon story and I'm setting it over here on the other side of my desk. And I'm going to go back to talking about other things because they're not going to go after Reverend Wright. But I'm telling you, if they do, I will. And just to wrap this all up, Bruce in Stansbury Park, Utah, says that what it says here on the call screen software, Bruce, is I'm a Mormon and six things that are wrong. Did I say six wrong things about Mormons? Bruce?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, actually, the article you were reading, I think the men that were contributing to that would probably still be Mormons had they understood the doctrines behind what those things are. They're just, you know, what they say is just twisted slightly on almost every one of those points. I'll just take one point.
Okay.
You know, we have sealing ceremonies in the temple where people can be sealed to each other for all time and eternity, because we believe our existence continues on beyond this life.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have people stand in proxy for loved ones who have passed that they want to be included in the sealing. Doesn't mean that those people on the other side have to accept it. It mm-hmm. just means that what's sealed on earth
right.
is sealed in heaven, and what's loosed on earth is loosed in heaven. It just gives them the opportunity on the other side.
Okay.
No one's trying to force anything. And
as I said, to me that sounds totally wackadoodle, but I totally support your right to believe that. And if you find solace in that and value in that, I super support your right.
Well, it's just that it does make sense. If you, it would take me a long
time. No, if it makes sense to you, that's all it takes for
me. Go into that.
Yeah, no, if it makes sense for you, Bruce, it's fine with me.
It makes sense to me and about 10 million other people.
Yeah. Well,
but, the LDS Church is very capitalistic and is absolutely would be a good influence on our economy. So I'm not a Romney fan, by the way, but you have to give the devil their due. And
okay. I wouldn't have used that metaphor, but we'll leave it at that. Bruce, thank you very much for the call. Let's see here. Darlene in Four Oaks, North Carolina. Hey, Darlene, thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV on, what is it, Dish Network, DirecTV?
Dish Network,
great. What's up?
Well, Mr. Tom, I don't sit in church on Sundays and listen to people tell me what the Bible says and what it's supposed to mean. I actually sat down and read it.
Yeah, I have too, four times.
and
cover to cover.
There's a passage in there that says a house divided will fall.
Yes, or will not stand, actually.
If you open up any phone book, you'll find 17 to 20 pages of churches.
Mm-hmm.
Now, anybody that believes in the Bible should know this house is going to fall.
Mm.
It's divided. It's way divided.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask you something else, not related to that topic, but when you were talking that day about the lady in the cafeteria that you felt bad about because you didn't buy her lunch
about a month ago. Yeah.
Well, every mystic within the sound of your voice heard you.
Mm-hmm.
And that was all I wanted to say.
Okay. Thank you very much. Every mystic, did you say?
Yes.
Yeah. See, now, if I had to put a label on myself, I would go with that. Meister Eckhart. Have you ever read the writings of Meister Eckhart?
No.
He was a German.
I read a lot, though.
Yeah. You should look it up. I think you would just absolutely love his writings. He was a German. I think he was Lutheran. He might have been Catholic, but he was writing in the 17th or 18th century. And he was a mystic, and he saw God in everything. I mean, it's just amazing stuff. Meister Eckhart, check it out. Darlene, thank you so much for the call.
Wait, spell that for me. I want to look it up.
Okay, Meister, and okay. Eckhart. Hang on just a minute here. I don't remember if it's with a T or a D. It's Eckhart, and it's either T or D. And I'll find out. Yeah, it's Hart. Okay?
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome, and thank you for the call. Beth in San Luis Obispo, California. Hey, Beth, thanks for watching DirecTV, Free Speech TV. What's up?
And thank you for all that you do. I just wanted to make a comment on, how they're trying to dredge up the Reverend Wright thing mm-hmm. again.
Yeah.
Hopefully they don't. Hopefully they realize that it's old news and it's tired.
But and it's toxic.
I just want to know where they're thinking at, because I hear religious right people talking about how when we have natural disasters or 9/11, that God did it because he's mad at America. Now, what is the difference between Reverend Wright saying God has damned America because of slavery and people's stance on racism?
Yeah, I don't see much difference. I thought it was an impassioned speech, and the unfortunate phrase was "God will damn America" or "God damn" or whatever it may be. I think that was it. And in context, frankly, I thought it made a certain amount of sense that from a religious point of view, if you believe that God condemns people for bad behavior, We certainly have no shortage of bad behavior in the history of our country, and we haven't really cleansed ourselves of that. And, you know, on the other hand, I wouldn't have said it in front of a group of people. I wouldn't say it on the radio. So, Beth, thank you for the call, though. Excellent point. Brian in Seattle. Hey, Brian, thanks for listening to Talk 1090. What's up?
Oh, yes. I grew up in northern Michigan. I'm a big fan of the history, and I learned quite a bit of it there. And people don't realize that only about two-thirds of the Mormons followed Brigham Young out to Utah when they were thrown out of Missouri.
Yeah, there was a big schism.
The other third went with a fellow named James Strang up to Beaver Island in Lake Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And my great-grandparents and great-great-grandparents were, you know, they grew up in fear of attacks by the Mormons from Beaver Island because they were known to come in large bands and take anything, what did they consider, anything that was the work of nature or God could belong to the Mormons. So they would take lumber, they would take preserved meat, they would take fisheries, they would confiscate people's boats because they were going to be fishing where the Mormons should be fishing. It was very strange. They were eventually driven off of Beaver Island. I think there's still a small Strangus group in Wisconsin, but their history is even odder than people think.
Fascinating. Brian, thanks for that little footnote at the end of the segment. I appreciate it. 45 minutes past the hour. We will be back. What are the reasons Mitt Romney should be denied the presidency?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I can think of a bunch of reasons why Mitt Romney shouldn't be president, and I'd put at the top of the list that he signed on to Paul Ryan's budget to privatize Medicare.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. AJ in Spirit Lake, Iowa. Hey, AJ, what's up?
Hi, how you doing, Tom?
Great. Thanks for listening to Sirius.
I know the topic has kind of been religion and Romney today.
Yeah, but I just wanted to... And you can make a point on it, but as I said, I'm going to back away from this now because they've backed away from it. I've said all along I'm not going to attack Romney on his religion unless they start using religion as a weapon. And certainly that was the New York Times' big story this morning, was that they were planning on it. So I thought I'd, you know, fire a shot across their bow. And within an hour or so of our starting this topic, and I'm sure other talk show hosts did before me, Ricketts and others have come out and said, nah, we're not going to do that. I think that's wise. Yeah. So I'll stop.
No, I just wanted to commend you for actually mentioning wind energy in your good segment there.
Oh, okay.
You know, Ed and Stephanie and those, you know, you don't hear wind energy really mentioned much, but I was actually just on my way home. I'm taking the wind energy class at a local tech school in Iowa right now, and I can tell you firsthand it's done big things for the economy up here. Actually, lease payments for one turbine up in northwest Iowa right now are going for $10,000 landowners can expect a year.
Wow.
It's a fixed payment that, you know, landowners can depend on around here.
Right.
And that doesn't even mention what it does. The tax base, one turbine, they're saying right now we'll pay $9,500 to the tax base. It can go to, you know, schools and stuff like that.
That's spectacular. And wind is, and by the way, importing oil from Saudi Arabia does none of the above, and or even coal from West Virginia. And not only that, the, you know, 20% of the electricity in the state of Iowa is now being produced by wind. And about 20% of the electricity in the state of Texas is being produced by wind. I mean, this is serious stuff.
And when you see millionaires like Warren Buffett and Mid-American Energy investing in it, you know it's a good thing that has returns.
Yeah.
Serious return.
There you go. Okay.
And, you know, it's investments like that that I think we need to make to get the economy moving again. We need to pass that production tax credit. It's pretty important.
Totally with you. Thank you very much, AJ. I appreciate the call. Melissa in Chicago. Hey, Melissa, what's up?
Well, Tom, I belong to the cult of the Chicago Cubs.
Okay.
And my husband and I have been season ticket owners for 28 years.
Yeah.
But when I saw that article in the New York Times, I contacted the Cubs, and I told them we would be canceling those tickets.
I wonder if that's why an hour and a half ago Joe Ricketts came out and said, we're not going to run that Jeremiah Wright ad.
I'd like to take credit for it, Tom.
I wonder how many people called, you know.
You know, the funny thing is I tried to email, and there was an error message. I thought they were blocking. Anyway, but I called. They told me where specifically to email. I did. I got a response from our liaison with the Chicago Cubs thanking us, and it was forwarded to all the Rickards.
Amazing.
But we not another dime spent on the Cubs if they go ahead with this swift voting behavior.
Yeah.
And also, we're canceling, if it comes to pass, we will cancel our TV Ameritrade account, too. So,
yeah, which is the other company that Joe Ricketts started. Thank you very much, Melissa. Thanks for the heads up on that, and good on you for being an activist. Dan in Dubuque, Iowa. Hey, Dan, what's on your mind today?
But when talking about the religion thing, it should not be in government, and everybody's dogmas are dogmas, you know?
Yep.
And if you want to buy into their dogmas, that's what you do.
Yep.
You know, it's a people world.
What's the old bumper sticker? Your karma just ran over my dogma? Sorry.
You know, it's right there, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a people world.
No, I agree. That's why I said, you know, I think most organized religions have bizarre practices or beliefs associated with them. But I guarantee you that if I turned my own personal belief system into an organized religion and said, okay, here's the Church of Tom, here's what you've got to believe, everybody would be going, he's crazy, you know? He's absolutely nuts. I mean, I walk into work, and I walk up to, there's a giant oak tree on the way here. I walk up to that oak tree, put both hands on either side of it, and, you know, take a breath and feel like I'm breathing with the tree, and I talk to it. And I actually believe that there's that tree has
That's
some
cool.
sort of sentience that
That's
is communicating
very, very
with
cool.
me. Now,
That's very, very cool.
No, I'm telling you, most people think I'm crazy. In fact, the other day I was doing that, and some guy goes by on a bicycle. He says, it ain't going to fall over no matter how hard you push.
Well, maybe he thought you were trying, maybe he thought you were just giving it a big old hug, you know?
I'm hugging my tree, you know?
Yeah, you know?
So I, you know, I am in no position to say that somebody else's religion is crazy, because mine is pretty crazy.
Well,
but
I want to interject this religious deal about the Cubs. You know, I'm a Cub fan, big time.
Yeah,
and that was crazy when you started talking about the Ricketts. You know, I mean, I wish they would have had gotten Ryan Sandberg first. You know,
yeah. Well, here's the thing. Are you familiar with how the Green Bay Packers are owned?
Yeah, yeah.
They're owned by the local community. They're called the Packers because they were started by a meatpacking union. And the local community in Green Bay, Wisconsin owns the Packers. And they had to get a waiver from the NFL. Every other team now is owned by billionaires. And basically, you've got to be a rich guy to own a football team or a baseball franchise. And I think that's wrong. I think that we should
in the community are going to be the ones that back at the most.
The community gets screwed, and the community is the one that gives all the money to these guys who get all
Absolutely.
This money. I think that we should say that the Green Bay Packers has to become the model for every major football, baseball, hockey, basketball team in the country. They need to be owned by if you're expecting. You know, like George W. Bush did when he had the Texas Rangers, and they went to the local community in Dallas, and they said, cough up some money to build a new stadium. And they did, and they built the new stadium, and the team was worth a lot more, so Bush was able to sell his stock for a small fortune.
But
if you're going to do that, go ahead.
It originated, though. It was through the communications takeover.
Yeah.
That's how that whole plan started.
Well, in part, yeah. Dan, we're out of time, but thank you for the call. Coming up next on the Tom Hartman program, it's, of course, Friday tomorrow, and guess what? That means Brunch with Bernie. America's Senator Bernie Sanders will be here taking your calls in our national town hall meeting. Plus, anything goes on town hall Friday, what do you want to talk about? And the rest of the news and your calls right here on the Tom Hartman program, occupying the media 3 hours a day, 5 days a week for We the People. And don't forget, democracy begins when you get active. Get out there and get active. Occupy something. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.